blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Haridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint in religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Oh, happy blessed day! Oh, happy blessed place! Oh, happy blessed time! Oh, happy blessed path! Oh, happy blessed opportunity! In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma. And I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
pushing up from the base of the spine, as if you are pushing, holding the ceiling up with the top of your head. Allowing the shoulders to relax. Pelvis is tilted forward slightly. Chin is slightly tucked. Eyes cast downward at 45 degrees with a soft gaze. Left hand is resting in the right, thumbs lightly touching. The body is relaxed yet alert. Counting silently at the bottom of each exhalation, starting with one. And continuing through to 10. And beginning again. Nowhere to go, nothing to do, just being with whatever arises.
We are here in suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If any suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
This was a really neat thing this last week. I need to supply a little bit of content. I somehow got on a list of prospective jurors for this federal district court in Fresno. And I've been called. And the end of this month. And it was one of those things where, you know, you get this notice and it says you're on call for a month. And it says, you can call in after 5 o'clock the night before to find out if you're going to be called. But if I was called, it was going to be 8 in the morning, and so I would have to go to Fresno anyway. And so what I watched happen was this huge story. Mm. First of all, you know, I think part of what I see arising is, you know, as an Enneagram 5, do not invade my space, you know. Don't come into my life and, you know, tell me what to do on a given day. So that's part of what arises. But it's a very familiar pattern I've seen so often of, what I see is conditioning putting me in the role of victim, mm-hmm. and then arousing anger as a way of my thinking and feeling. It sort of convinces me I need the anger to be powerful enough to respond. Do you know? Uh-huh. So the first piece of it I see is, and I've seen before. In fact, I think I mentioned it in here not long ago. Is there's a disempowering by becoming a victim, and then what conditioning often does, which is substitute something that really isn't the real thing, and as though it is the real thing, so it substitutes anger, mm-hmm. which can feel powerful. Mm-hmm.
So the first response is that of feeling mm-hmm. victimized by it, and that's the precursor to
the setup for this other
what you're told is anger, which is what fuels an ability to act in the right. situation.
And then the other thing that's a very familiar pattern is then this whole scenario gets set up about how it's going to be, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and in sort of righteous me against them kind of scenario about, I'm going to call and I'm going to say, can't you let me know earlier than that? And they're going to say, I'm sorry, this is our system. And and I'm going to probably have to go through a menu of 40 different places before I can get to anybody.
So a scenario gets set up, but it's always one where you're on the offensive, and yeah.
And so what happened was, I called and talked to got a human being right away, who happened to be the world's most delightful person.
Which was totally what I guess.
Totally
the
scenario. And so I said, it would be helpful if I could know a little earlier in the day. And she said, well, where do you live? And I told her, and she said, call at like 10 in the morning, and we'll do whatever we can to let you know. But she could not have been nicer. And it was so helpful that she was, because it just exposed, the whole process. Uh-huh. Because it didn't match the... It would have been so unhelpful had she matched the process, had she matched the scenario.
Right.
But she didn't. And so I've seen these other pieces before, the disempowerment, the anger, the scenario, And then I've also seen before that conditioning creates a scenario. And I get that. But the piece that I really saw this time that was so helpful was that what conditioning was describing that I would run into was exactly what conditioning is like. I got that the conditioning was describing itself. Uh-huh. An impersonal system doesn't care about you. Uh-huh. If it can make you miserable, all the better. Uh-huh. I mean, I just got, it's all a projection uh-huh. of conditioning. I've never seen that clearly, uh-huh. at least in this kind of situation. So it was a fabulous opportunity to just see something completely exposed.
Wow.
So I was very, very grateful.
So you got to see what the Fresno court system looks like through the eyes of through the projection of conditioning and see that that's just a complete projection of conditioning.
Right.
I also found it really interesting that you say that you go to the victim place first, but even though the scenario was being played out, somebody picked up the phone to call and check it out, where it could have been just do what they said.
Right. It's hopeless.
Hopeless and go to Fresno. And
Yeah. But I still have to go to Fresno. Because she did say the chances are like 99% that on that particular date you will be called. But she still said, go ahead and call at 10 in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, is there anything else I can do to help? I could have said, go in my place. But other than that, you know, she just, it was, I guess it was so helpful to see a whole process unmasked and to see one more step of it than I've seen in the past.
Yeah.
And to get that, you know, there's always a certain message from conditioning presents something, in this case anger, as the, and the kind of the message is this is the best it can be. This is as good as it can get. You know, this is the most you can hope for.
Yeah.
And to see that if I don't buy at the very beginning the thing it does, the disempowerment it creates, I have all the power in the world. I don't have to go there.
Yeah.
So that was really, that's really helpful to see.
To see that you have all the power in the world.
Yeah.
And you don't have to go where conditioning suggests.
Mm-hmm.
And that indeed the scenario it suggests is not the end, the end picture.
And a woman's response was such a gift, because if she had met me the way I anticipated, it just would have reinforced the way I was coming at it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It just would have built each other up
right.
into more our condition system. Mm-hmm. So the woman responded, it was so disarming. That it really, it was very liberating for me.
Very liberating. It just sounds very liberating, the whole
thing.
Every time that we unmask that process of conditioning and see that it's not us, that it's indeed just a projection of that system, it is liberating.
It is.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you. I had a similar week. Well, I didn't. It was helpful to see that because I was thinking about that quote on the board of karma, the incessant push toward what we think we deserve.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's still on there, but I always say my modification of that is the incessant push against what is.
Incessant push against what is.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, I can just feel it always pushing against life. That thing that creates stories and makes meaning out of stuff and tells me. And I was thinking how it's just so backwards. I don't know how it happens, you know, that conditioning, that karma or whatever. So it's for me, so this week did not go as planned. I had a sick child. And you know, one of my great conditioned responses to life is worry and anxiety. And so, and I don't listen to the news on purpose. But of course I have friends and relatives who email me, the flu's coming. So you know, I create stories in my head and I create stories in my head and I start believing them and, you know, it just starts spinning and then there's no access to wisdom or life or the next step.
Mm-hmm.
There's so someone in the home arises with the flu, and I'm not sure now, right? Because I can't be present to it because I'm so caught up in, is it the right symptoms? Is it the right whatever?
Right.
And I'm calling, you know, I have doctor friends. I'm calling my doctor friends. Here's the symptoms. And they say, well, I really do think it sounds like the influenza. No, it can't possibly. It's just like, you know, and the week goes on, and then I get self-righteous. It is the influenza, and this is how to take care of it, and nobody in the house but me is doing it correctly. And
So many similarities to the process of conditioning.
Victim, conditioning. And I was looking, as was being described before, that there's already something that life has presented that's foreign, that's not what I would have planned. There's a bit of somewhat, not pain, not like a big pain, like a huge like cancer or something, but painful enough that it requires presence to attend to. And conditioning just talks me into know what I, instead of being present and just attending to what's presented, I should go up and be responsible and listen to it.
Attend to the story that it
has
about. Yes,
attend to the story. And when I would come back to life periodically, everything was just fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, this child is like the best patient because she's not caught in her conditioning, so there isn't a story. There's just a, I have to get to the bathroom and throw up, you know. So my head is hot and my head hurts and my face is hot. You know, there's no, this is going to last for weeks and we're all going to catch it. Which nobody did. You know, nobody did. And nothing that the story said was true. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't helpful. Mm-hmm. But then I do. I jumps in and I get angry and resentful and I'm irritable and I'm marching around the house, snapping at everybody and barking out orders and... You know, it's just, and then I come to my senses like 5 days later, you know, not quite 5 days, but it was a, and so anyway, one thing I saw about that was that what conditioning did as well was it told me how I needed to respond to what was going on, and it didn't include meditation. Right?
Right. It sounds like all the response that included was interacting with it and its worst case scenario, but nothing that would actually take care of the human in that situation.
Yeah. It didn't suggest. In fact, it built up, oh no, here's what you gotta do, you gotta, you know, and be hypervigilant, you know, in that sort of fearful.
As if, you know, what comes up is that constant, you know, as if we are the center of the universe and we could control everything, and there's something that you could do in this situation to make sure that, you know, it wasn't the influenza that was going to spread to, you know,
everybody in the house.
And
yeah, it's really, and what I was seeing about it, so I think I sort of popped out of it yesterday. somewhat. There was some relief from the conditioning. Mm-hmm. I was seeing that conditioning told me before spiritual practice that if I practice, there is going to be a time where I can just sort of float off into the sunset. But boy, one day without meditation, and I am like 20 years ago, you know, I can't indulge conditioned mind.
Right.
It's just...
This came up recently, you know, it's really very akin to an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the moment it gets indulged, it, you know, it just opens the gate to just go into the addiction full head on.
Yes.
You know, very much like an alcoholic taking that first drink and then, you know, not being able to stop.
I know a little bit about that from not my personal experience, but studying. And anyway, what I was told many years ago was an alcoholic, if they quit drinking, their disease keeps growing. Mm-hmm. So if they take a drink out here, which is, I think, what happened to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was way worse than 20 years ago this week. You know, it keeps going, you know, that thing is under there. That's what we're moving our attention away from and not listening to, but it's going. As soon as I move my attention to me, it's going to wield those stories that are so convincing and so real and make meaning out of it. And now what I'm going to do is
get a divorce and move.
Yeah. It was just the flu, you know.
He can have the kids and I'm leaving.
Not living with your kids anymore.
Exactly. Or a husband that's of no use, you know. But it does, and it seems real. I mean, even though it seems insane saying it out loud here, mm-hmm. when I'm in it, it's just so necessary to say something. So I'm very excited about my thing I'm committed to for my email class, my behavior that I'm going to not do. Well, I don't know. I'm not going to be able to not do it, just like the alcoholic can't quit drinking, right? But life is going to help me. So... it's criticizing and complaining, I pick two. And anyway, those are my things. I've talked about it. I've given it up for Lent before. This is a year. I think Lent's only 45 days or whatever. This is a year.
Would you say you've committed to a year of not criticizing and complaining?
I have this year. Yeah, that's my behavior.
Okay.
Yeah. My behavior, that question in the email class. I don't know if we're supposed to do it for a year, but I am going to bring my attention to it. I was thinking as I was walking down here this morning, like I bring my attention to the breath and the sesshin. Mm-hmm. I am not going to get, I will get talked out of it, of course, but my commitment is to, what ego wants to do is give me a lot of other things, behaviors I need to change. Oh, well, you could do this, or you could do that, or taking my attention away from what I've committed to.
Some better idea.
Which is to see how I do that behavior. Mm-hmm. This year, because it's pervasive in my life. It has been forever, for lifetimes probably. So that was encouraging. I mean, I did do that this week.
You used that practice this week?
The class, the practice. I practiced the class. No, I didn't get to it. That was just Friday.
The class came out. Okay.
Yeah, the email. So
this is a new commitment as of Friday.
This morning. Friday, yeah, I've seen a lot about it. Friday, I read the thing and I thought, I felt so much better. And then I thought, this is what ego does to me. Well, you really need to take a little more time to consider.
You don't
really need to practice that today. You really want to make sure you pick the right behavior to stop. Okay. So anyway, this morning I saw through that. So it's just been really this morning, to tell you the truth. But I'm still excited about having something.
And how useful to just say it and to, you know, and to say it out loud and to be able to check back in.
Yeah.
And bring it to group and let us know how that's going.
Yeah. Yeah, I will. So thank you.
I'm finding it helpful to oust anything that's going on between the ears.
Anything between the ears.
I'm a big fan of it, just because when it's between here, it's so true. You know, it's just
oh, when it's caught up here, it's so true.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, we talk, you know, how they talk about it. Well, it's just like the story of the rose-colored glasses. You know, they could be any color, actually. with conditioned mind, it doesn't really matter. Because it'll get me on the upside too, you know, with the fantasies about how it could be, you know, and they start rolling with the energy, and usually they'll end up in a train wreck somewhere down the line. But it's not possible for you, and so. But anyway, I've just been finding it helpful to get them out, you know, and so the formula that's been taking so far, and we have recording and listening, but the precursor to it seems to be really helpful is just to start writing it out.
Right.
You know, like, what is it saying right now? And I don't have to be even, like, so conscious. It could just be, like, what's the story? Or what, just to get it all out there, almost. Like, what, you know, even like, what am I believing at this moment? Like, if I were to describe it to somebody, you know, how would it be described? Yeah. You know, like this, you know, so I'm just going to describe this situation. And just in, I tell you, I only get halfway through, and all of a sudden I start seeing all sorts of, like, oh, that reminds me of that, and then it, oh, okay, I see how, boy, I do that. it's
so just getting that little bit of arm's length with it, you start to see how that process is prevalent in other areas or different
exactly.
pieces of content.
It starts to reveal it for what it is, almost. And it's it feels good to not have it in here any longer, because when it's trapped inside, it just it's almost like I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know, because it gets so interwoven in the, well, you shouldn't be having these thoughts, and you know, you should be thinking of whatever, and it's like, okay, great. I'm not only is it going on, but I'm not supposed to have it going on.
And yeah, that's such a beautiful place. It brings up that phrase, you know, it keeps us trapped in a hateful, shameful conversation
that
no one else, you know, it's just there.
Right.
Us and conditioning and that isolation that comes with that.
Yes. Yeah. And the one I'm practicing with currently is the scenario is, this is one of those, it's not okay, you know, and I'm just playing it out as though, you know, there's a story, I don't know where I read it, but something about Thoreau. He would go around, pretend like other people's houses would belong to him, and he would describe about how it was like, and I have to find that. I don't know where that is located. I know Sherry had mentioned it at one point a while ago, a long, long time ago. And there's something about finding a place of acceptance in that, like, because something about imagining something that isn't quote unquote real gets for me triggered as like, this is some, you know, it's not okay, you know. And just to have it put into that circle where I'm accepting it, and that I'm kind of like living it. Okay, yeah, well, if I was living the life that I was living, what would it look like? And it could be, I mean, I'm finding the process to be very inspirational, because a lot of it is like, well, it's not that way, and so, but I'm not listening to any of that. I'm just going to go play it out. I'm going to like, okay, well, if, you know, the place I'm living in was the place that I really loved, what would it have? You know, and it's just so helpful. It's freeing in that way too, where it's like, okay, well, they never have, you know, a swimming pool in the backyard, but I'm like, you know, I'm designing, you know, like whatever, and it's just such a, and it just feels good to the part of me who has this,
has that vision,
whatever that feels like, you know, because then I have that feeling of like, I don't know how to describe it, but I'm just having a really good time with it at the moment, because so much of it is tied into that hateful, shameful conversation where it's like, it's not okay.
Yeah. It's interesting that we can have endless, hateful, shameful conversations about what's kind of an imaginary future or outcome, and we never hear anything about how that's not real and we shouldn't put any attention there. And then you're practicing right now, putting your attention on something that actually, it sounds like, inspires.
Yes.
And that's inspiring to you.
It is.
And it's just
I love it.
A much more life-affirming place to go.
Exactly.
Between the years.
Right, and I never left or did anything different than I had when it was just going on here. Mm-hmm. But something about it just moves. It's like moving energy almost.
It is.
It's like, I can't describe it any other way. You know, it's like, it's like when I used to be, responsible for the garden at one point. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd go out and all I would see was this weed overgrown, place. And I'd have a conversation with, somebody about how we're going to transform it and we're going to put energy into digging. And nothing has changed, but all of a sudden the garden looks completely different. And that's kind of like the parallel that I think I'm drawing with it.
Yeah.
Is that my attention has gone toward what's possible rather than what's wrong.
Right. What's possible rather than what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a good
place.
Yeah. Much, much more exciting place to live.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it is. Thank you.
Sherry.
What I've noticed in the last 24 hours, I've been reminded of, is how much if I take care of the being, it's much easier to not get identified with that conditioning that's constantly got a conversation going. And I was reminded of that yesterday after, you know, spending many hours and traveling, and airports tend to be sort of an energy-sucking place, and you don't eat well, and things like that. And you know, arriving last night, conditioning was just going, and I was just struggling to try to remain present and breathe and notice that I was breathing. And, occasionally conditioning would take control of the mouth, and, you know, there would be these words, I'm like, I can't believe I just said that, and or did that, or whatever. And so finally, just kind of relaxing and getting a good night's sleep, and it's much easier to be more relaxed and present and not so identified with what's going on between the ears when I've done a little care from the beginning. It seems to help. And of course, conditioning can overtake that and get, you know, obsessive about it. But being present and just breathing, relaxing, it really helps.
So really noticing in the last 24 hours how really caring for the being, caring for the body through rest and coming back to the breath is actually a good antidote for conditioning. And that, you know, just seeing how being in an environment all day yesterday that sounds like supports conditioning a little bit, at bad food, bad, you know, not much rest, just, you know, a lot of activity. It sounds like probably a lot of distractions going on around. And how you noticed the impact that had on you at the end of the day. And then contrasting that with how it feels to have, you know, taken some time to care for the body and rest and come back to the breath and just really concentrating on presence. So getting to see those two possibilities.
Well, I actually had a little success story right here on the cushion when we were sitting this morning. I love how Sherry's been pointing out in the email class that the behavior we're doing that keeps us in suffering is paying attention to the conversation in our, what's going on between our ears. And, and you know, I think at this point in time that conversation is pretty clear. You know, it doesn't usually come up with anything new at this point.
It's clear when you hear that you're hearing the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, and the content of the content of it is like it doesn't vary a whole lot. You know, pretty much along the lines of you're going to die. There's something very wrong, and you're a hopeless case. You know, but in bottom line terms,
right.
You know,
right.
And so, you know, when I was looking at what, you know, so if that's the behavior, is the attending to that conversation, you know, what would be the behavior change that would happen with that? And what came through, what the mentor came through was a new conversation.
A new conversation.
A new conversation that was exactly really sort of the opposite of, you know, and really what I know to be true about life, you know? So a very simple little summation of what's really real, that is, you know, instead of ego's summation of what's really wrong and not real. And so my commitment is just to turn my attention to that other new little, it's almost like a mantra, but it's...
I was going to say, what's coming up for me, just that.
It's a very simple turning my attention to the words that are true, and that describe the life I know that is there.
Yes.
And so when I came in this morning and sat down to meditate for some reason, this thing started happening in my body that hasn't happened in years. Mm-hmm. And it was like, whoa, you know, where did that come from? You know, and where conditioning goes right with that is, you know, you're going to die, there's something very wrong. You know,
I told
there's
you so,
no hope,
yeah.
You know, and this is here we are again, you know, and, you know, and you're going to have to leave. You got to get up and go home somewhere because you're going to die if you stay here. And I said, well, no, actually the guidance is to stay here, even if you're dying. So, you know, at least if I die here, I've got company.
You're in friends.
You're in friends. If I leave and start walking home, I might die by myself, so I might as well stay. And so then, so I just started repeating that new conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, actually even just one little piece of it. Mm-hmm. And just kept repeating it over and over and over again. And by and large, what was going on stopped. Mm-hmm. Not totally. Still there a little bit, but at least the experience became much more pleasant.
Right. It's so interesting. Yeah, I mean, what you're describing is... which is such an integral part of practice, is learning to train the intention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, to have that a mantra or a simple phrase to just refocus on and bring it back over mm-hmm. and over again and to help assist in that training,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
build another neural pathway
right,
other
exactly.
than...
Exactly. You know, I've gotten fascinated by the brain in the past few months, so I've been reading a lot about it. And one of the recent things that I've been reading is how much of, you know, so we become aware of a conversation in our head or a thought, but how much has actually already gone on in the brain to create that thought that we have no idea of. So it's like we are... privy to a small amount of what's actually taking place in our brain. Mm-hmm. So in a way, it's not surprising that it's hard for us to figure out how I keep falling into that thought, because mm-hmm. a lot of it is happening under the radar, mm-hmm. where we aren't even aware. So, and I think, I don't know, to me partly why that's so is because of how much airtime it's gotten, you know, how much in our life, how much conditioning has had its way, has had its time. So those neural pathways are the ones that are more functional in a way, you know, so it has to be a process of creating new ones so that those new, not new, but the life's messages have a chance to get
Heard,
right, yeah. Heard and believed and trusted it in the same way that we've given false trust to mm-hmm. what conditioning is trying to tell us.
With all, I mean, for me, I know, just for all that time before practice of thinking that, what voice, that's me.
Mm-hmm. Right,
you know, right. There's right. no questioning, that's me doing an assessing of me.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And it deserves attention somehow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, sounds like it knows what it's talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems to be sort of how everybody else is talking. So.
without bringing the awareness and watching it, that the conversation is just constantly leading to suffering in our lives without end.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I've just been fascinated by that being pointed to as a behavior of paying attention to that conversation. I mean, I'm so programmed to think of behavior as something I'm actually physically doing, mm-hmm. you know, but to see that it is the origin behavior is, in a sense, is turning the conditioned mind to get information, you know. I mean, it's a behavior that doesn't happen with activity, you know, it's going on in here.
Oh, the first, there's the inkling
right.
or the
yeah.
movement
right.
toward that particular
yeah.
conversation, and then there's the...
Yeah, but even just, you know, when I'm asked what behavior am I doing that holds it in mm-hmm. place, I start looking towards, well, You know, how do I spend my time? What do I do? What am I physically doing? Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't think, oh, the behavior is that I'm paying attention
exactly.
to a conversation that is actually causing me to do those physical behaviors.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And seeing, for me too, just seeing recently, the behavior can be like just being caught and a certain act like paralysis, and doing that process over and over and over again, thinking that it's going to lead to something else, but you know, it's actually just leading to the same behavior again.
Yeah.
Without doing something like just cutting it off and going to a phrase or something that even like what Alex was mentioning earlier, just a different attitude or place to put the attention.
Yeah, because you know what I see too is that, so if there's a conditioned pattern of thought that causes me to act in a certain way over and over again, that act reinforces the story. In other words, the story causes the action. The action reinforces the story. So if the story is the world isn't a safe place, and my response is to then try and stay small and safe, the more I stay small and safe, the more scary the world
or unsafe
appears.
The world is.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a total loop.
Right.
So there's no, which you know is often pointed out, there's no way out of conditioning within conditioning.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's a closed system.
Really, very closed system. Doesn't want anybody messing with it.
No, it doesn't.
I'm interested if you have any particular tools you're using to bring yourself back to the awareness of the mantra, or to bring your attention back to that.
Three things so far. One is just having the other conversation trigger going back to that. And so when I hear, as I did this morning, oh my God, what is this? This, you know, is terrible. No, that means I go to the other story. The second is recording, listening, you know, putting that on the recorder and having it there to listen to. And the third, which I actually haven't carried out physically yet, but what came to me is that a couple years ago on a retreat, I had made these tiny little cards with different practices on them as reminders. And for a while I kept them in a box, and every once in a while I'd draw one out, and then the box got sort of put in a drawer somewhere and I had forgot all about them. So what occurred to me is, rather than just getting the box out and doing the drawing out thing anymore, is to take them all out and start locating them all around the house, you know, putting them where they're all visible so that I run into them when I open the refrigerator or sit down at the computer or brush my teeth or go to bed or sit down at the table or pick up a book or whatever I'm doing, that one of those will be staring me in the face.
I found that I had to actually put a little barrier across the door so that there's something physical for me to actually run into to just remind me, hey, you know. And it's pretty amazing. I can like walk into that rope, you know.
I don't see it.
I don't see the dark rope.
You know, rope.
It's really an interesting exploration. How it just will just be relentless and trying to capture our attention for its own purposes, but
And one of the things for me is keeping it fresh. You know, I mean, when it's first a new idea, and then I have all these ideas for keeping it alive, and like, so I'll put all those little things around the house,
exactly.
And for a while they'll be really great, and then they'll become part of the woodwork, you know. And I will stop it, you know, if somebody would point out to me, oh, that little thing over there, and I go, oh gosh, I forgot that was that, you know. so it almost has to be a continual reinvention of how to come back to it, because once it becomes so-so,
right.
It becomes just, you know, gobbled up by life, not good, not life with a capital L, life with a small L, and you know. So it's not something that I can say, oh, this will work and it will work forever.
It's kind of like what Susan was referring to, isn't it? That we get to this place in practice where, you know, it's just going to be a cruise.
Right.
That, you know, okay, I've got all these reminders up now. I don't have to pay attention. It's, you know, it is a constant rekindling of that enthusiasm and that, you know, determination to go for it.
Yeah.
Because, conditioning has a limited arsenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's really clear to me at this stage it's not ever going to be a cruise, you know, and I read something else recently about practice, that if you're serious about practicing, you have to really be willing to lead a different kind of life.
Yeah.
That if what you want to focus on is what makes me comfortable and that, then really maybe this isn't the time to practice. But if what you really want is to move into a larger context for life and for everyone else in life, then practice. But know that it's not necessarily going to support the kind of life that I thinks it wants to have.
What is it that I want for the world?
Yeah.
What is the kind of life that I want for the whole world, and to have that life?
Yeah. Which reminds me of a fourth way that I'm remembering my commitment is that I have, for another thing I was doing for another group, I have this little card with these images on it from magazines, and they're all things that remind me of a life much bigger than me, people from other places, critters, nature. When I see that, what I'm reminded of is that there's a lot more than this little world that involves this little me and its sorrows and tribulations and struggles. It's just like a real quick visual, oh right, this is not what it's about.
It's the whole John Kabat-Zinn calls it the whole catastrophe, you know, but it's just all of it. It's everything.
Yeah.
So, very much along those lines, I think I've been looking at how it's necessary to have a really active relationship with life in practice, rather than what is really habitual for me is it's kind of a passive relationship. Sort of like an expectation that, you know, like in some way I deserve for all life to come to me, and I don't have to do anything to make that happen, or to, you know, it's a little kid place, really.
It is. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's, you know, it was the victim thing was talked about earlier, that's a piece of it. You know, if life isn't coming to me and giving me what I want, then in some way I'm a victim, and because that's not what's supposed to be happening and stuff. And it's just so different from the reality. You know, that what's required is to, I really need to meet life where life is, and it won't come.
Right.
It won't come. It's kind of like there's this habit of being sort of like back on my heels. You know how, like, if you're in a sport or something, you know, you are supposed to be on your toes, because you can't, if you're standing back on your heels, you can't respond to anybody.
Right.
It's like that. I'm just kind of packing my heels all the time.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's been really helpful.
Huh. That's an interesting image. Yeah. So just looking at having to meet life, you know, or just, it's a much more active and engaged position of just being there to meet whatever life gives us to engage with, versus that kind of little kid place of focusing on, well, what's in it for me? I mean, that's what comes up, you know, kind of,
or there's a separation, or I feel not good enough, or, you know, just all, whatever piece of, whatever aspect of conditioning might be sort of in play.
Yeah.
And if what I want is to live a, you know, a beautiful life in relationship with life, then in this interesting way, I have to treat that. Mm-hmm. Even though there is no I, and even though I can't, you know, anything that I receive is coming from life. Uh-huh. I am life also, uh-huh. But there is also, this is always a mysterious place to be. I also have to do my part, even though there's no me.
Yeah. Huh. It's almost like it just has to be some kind of opening, or just, you know, some kind of big willingness to be there, to be used by life.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it.
Yeah.
Yesterday, in the afternoon, we were sitting, and my inspiration level had dipped earlier in my lunchtime. And, you know, there's a little separation there, mm-hmm. and there's a little story that's going on, and mm-hmm. so it's, and you know, my energy's not moving well, and you know that experience, mm-hmm. I'm kind of slog around a little bit, and you know, it's not like intense suffering or anything like that, it's just this low, and then I suddenly remembered this thing about this active-passive thing, mm-hmm. and so I just practiced this, like getting on my toes, mm-hmm. even though I was sitting. But you know, getting on my toes sort of in here, it's the tiniest little change in the world. It's just a little itty bitty shift in an orientation. And then it didn't happen right away, but pretty quickly my ears started to move, I started to feel good. Here suddenly there's divinity is here, and enters everything that I want. And it's just this little tiny change.
It is a little tiny change, and it doesn't require that we need to go read a book, or we need to, you know, change our clothes, or we need to do anything. It's just this, I have had that same experience with, you know, working with the voices of self-hate. You know, sometimes there can just be this opening, like, I'm going for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just makes all the difference in the world. Mm-hmm. And versus that, well, I don't know, this seems pretty hard, and, you know.
Yeah, you know, I just put that together with the other thing you said. I can't remember what you said a minute ago about just being opening, maybe opening to life. Because I just sort of got it. That's what it is. Is there's that inspiration, you might say, which also comes from life, I think. I'm going for it, or however you said that.
Yeah.
And what that does, it doesn't create an I to do that. It's just like this opening, and then all the energy of life comes through. And it's life that does it.
Uh-huh.
It just kind of feels like me, because it's happening through this form and in this mind and everything. But it's really, it's kind of life is taking charge of that. It's kind of like giving it permission.
What's coming up for me is it's that resistance thing. It's like suddenly mm-hmm. the brakes are taken off, or that, you know, that all that the resistance is lessened a bit, so that life can just start moving through. Mm-hmm.
I heard, or read actually, this thing I was reading not long ago, the way this guy was, I think, describing the same thing. He was saying that, he was talking about like hindrances, that will be, from his point of view, we have one hindrance to spiritual growth, mm-hmm. and that's laziness. And this is kind of an interesting word to use, but what he meant by that was, you know, we have this deep habit of avoiding anything that's uncomfortable or painful at all costs.
Yeah.
And that's our number one priority in life.
Yeah.
And that's what he was calling laziness. I don't think it was judgmental at all, but it's like a spiritual
laziness, or
And I just sort of really seeing, and it's very hard to remember. Mm-hmm. But I'm really seeing that's what's required. You know, just to be on my toes, even if I'm resting.
Yeah.
You know, kind of being on my toes all the time, because that's what puts me in relationship with life. That's what gives me energy. That's what makes everything work.
Yeah.
All that.
You know, it seems like that's what I remember hearing in a lot of stories about the Buddha. You know, that he was just on his toes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even to not like, you know, going to sleep and sleeping totally soundly, but keeping himself slightly awake through the night, just mm-hmm. to be on his toes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of willingness to be right there.
Yeah, and it's fun to have. I really am grateful that little experience I had yesterday in meditation, because it's almost physical. There's this little way kind of in here that I can practice that. Mm-hmm. It's tiny, just this little tiny, I'm here. You know, mm-hmm. I'm paying attention, I'm looking. It's like that. And I mean, I've had this awareness a bunch of times over the past few months, and then pretty quickly forgotten. Mm-hmm. And then I've woken up, I'm back on my heels again, kind of being comfortable. And I've woken up because of the unhappiness that's there.
Yeah.
And that's going to happen again, I guarantee it, probably soon.
Yeah.
But I'm really grateful to have those experiences, because I think the more that I go through that and forget and remember and forget and remember, I think it'll become, I'm hoping I can train myself that's a basic orientation of life that I have. We'll see. But that's kind of my aspiration, because that would kind of make a tremendous difference in my life experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the on your toes life experience.
Yeah.
To be in that place.
Yeah. And conditioning says, well, that's tiring. You know, or that's too much work. But it's the completely opposite of this.
Right.
It's invigorating. It's
exactly.
It's enlightening.
And ultimately, that's what's comfortable.
And that's
you
a
know?
Good point.
And that's what it would tell us, that comfort is going to sleep.
Right.
And boy, how many times do we have to check that out before we find, you know, really get it? That is not at all comfortable.
That's an excellent point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yes.
Just to touch on awareness, last week was our...
Would you tell me your name?
Oh, Tim.
Tim.
Last week was our first time here, and we got the directions in the email, and, you know, no problem, we found the place, and during the morning, I kind of reawakened to old disciplines of being aware and in the moment. And so it was nice. And throughout the week, I would kind of practice that and remind my daughter to be in that place. So this morning, we were focused and we're making our drive and we're in the moment. And just like that, the kind of the trees opened up and there was a view. And yeah, that's really beautiful. And the next thing, my daughter, Dad, I think we're going the wrong way. Kind of out in the woods and going down the wrong path. And just in that instant, my attention was just ripped from me. And, you know, this whole kind of in-the-moment thing was gone. I had to find my way back. Just find the silence at center. But I was just, it was funny how quickly, you know, you can lose that moment.
Uh-huh.
Or the more you try to reach or grasp, I guess, like water, it just goes uh-huh. away.
So that you were having this wonderful, it sounds, experience of just being here and enjoying
correct.
The beauty around, and then to suddenly have another piece of information delivered.
Right.
That this might be beautiful, Dad, but it's not beautiful. It's not the right beauty. And then to see how, you know, it sounds like there was kind of a scrambling to hold on to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there was probably another conversation going around on about having made a mistake or gone the wrong direction.
Right, and admitting to myself
that,
you know, it was my blunder.
Yeah, bring it all back to you and that you
right.
should, yeah. It's interesting and how it quickly can just take something like that is just beautiful and relaxing and turn it into something for its own use. Anything more about that?
No, just in general, because I make a drive from the Bay Area mm-hmm. on Friday afternoons up to Sonora, and touching on suffering, I'm sitting in traffic. It's a pretty hectic commute, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, why me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm suffering. Mm-hmm. But then if I look around me, there's thousands of people partaking in this massive
exodus.
So, I mean, taking that into consideration and helping to dissolve that suffering by identifying it,
yeah.
I think, is probably my next step.
Who's bringing attention and awareness to what's going on and seeing the possibility in that moment to practice? You know, it's what we practice with here all the time. It's not so much the content. It's just, it's what we bring to our experience in the moment and being present with it. Yeah.
and trying to breathe when everybody's hitting their brakes and cutting you off.
Well, good. Keep coming back and tell us and keep us posted and the journey to the monastery.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks.
Just I was just remembering a little incident of an interesting process of inquiry that shows the lie of conditioning. So last week when I came down from working meditation and was given the assignment to clean the bathrooms, and conditioning always says, "Oh no, not the bathrooms." and so I said, "Okay, we're going to clean the bathrooms, and I want you to show me everything about it you don't like."
Huh. Interesting.
Couldn't find a single.
You know, it's such a great practice to call it out.
That's right. You tell me what is so awful. You show me everything that is awful about this job. Uh-huh. And at the end of the day, I said, "So, I'm not seeing that you showed me anything that was really terrible."
Silence.
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 So, is it true we don't like this job?
Yeah.
But you know, it's just so automatic. Oh, I hate cleaning bathrooms.
Right, and then it could have been the whole period of time how much I hate cleaning bathrooms.
Exactly.
Without ever having the examining what
that's
it is
right.
exactly about
that's right.
the bathrooms
that's
odious.
That's right. I said, okay, that's why it was so fun. I said, okay, let's just make this a project.
Mm-hmm.
And so there must be a lot of things like that in life where.
Yeah,
where a simple inquiry would say, "Well, I guess that's not so, is it?"
Seems like a good example of being on one's toes.
Yeah. Well, and also I think for me it's a good example of I don't want to spend the afternoon suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right. Let's make a different choice.
Let's do something else.
Yeah, and finding out it's possible to enjoy.
I mean, it's so funny because I always enjoy it when I do it, mm-hmm. and I always hate it when I think I have to do it. You know, that's just so weird. when I think, you know, even sometimes coming down here before I get here, oh God, I might have to clean the bathrooms. You know, as if that would to be the end of the world. And I have never had a bad time cleaning the bathrooms. So, you know, that's just so the story of conditioning. It makes me think that something is true even when my whole life experience has never had that happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absurd.
Yeah, really. It really is a demonstration of a tape loop.
Yes.
A rut that it just runs itself with having no basis.
Yeah.
In
yeah. I mean, it has so no basis that I can't even tell you where it ever came from,
mm-hmm.
except maybe other people saying they hated it because I never have.
Boy, it feels like I talk about that all the time. My favorite place that shows up is in exercise. I know that I will feel magnificent, terrific, exhilarated, energized, all these wonderful things.
Yeah.
And right before it, it's like, oh my God.
I mean,
go through the list. You have to put on the outfit. You're in the outfit. You have to roll the mat out.
You're going to have to move your arms and legs.
You're going to be in pain. Yeah. You know, it's going to be exhausting. You're going to be tired. Never, ever have I been tired afterwards.
Right.
Never.
Right.
I mean, that's why I have these like reminders up all over, you know, or in my recordings say, you know, you're going to be full of energy. It's going to be wonderful. Trust me, I'm on the other side of it. I'm making this recording saying, go over there. Trust me, it's going to be great. And I feel like I do that with everybody in practice. It's, you know, I have to, you know, because like, you take on a practice, like someone says, why don't you do a gratitude list? It's like, oh God. I'm going to be grateful for something.
It is. It's if we wait till we feel like doing something.
Oh, yeah, for conditioning to feel like doing it. Yeah, it'll be a long time. Before there's any doubt that the voices exist. Just try to do something kind for yourself or do something that is that supports the heart, truly takes care of the being.
Yeah.
Has no problem, you know, go off and do something that is unhelpful and skillful.
Well, yeah, what was pointed to, I think, in the earlier share about caring for the physical body. I mean, yeah, because what happens if we care for this body and then it's, you know, it's much harder for conditioning to take a residence in it, a residence there, if it's being cared for.
Yeah.
In a kind of way.
I guess it's just a practice of keep proving it wrong over and over and over again, just to whatever kind of reminders that I can have set up for myself.
Yeah.
The kind of support needed to keep bringing my attention back to what it is that I know is true,
right,
rather than what doesn't serve me or life or anything.
Right. And it's certainly, and being in this room with Sangha and bringing that to this discussion is, I think, one of the most excellent ways to just keep it in our awareness, in all of our awareness.
It is, yeah, to know that, for me, to know that everyone has this experience, that I'm not just the only one who, you know, gets talked out of doing things that are good for me,
right.
You know, and also to know, it feels like I get lots of tips on how to actually, you know, to stay present and keep my attention focused on something that's helpful.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go forth then. Thank you.